Well, welcome back to another exciting new year of Cambridge
yes,
Inside
it's
Out.
Yes, 2019.
Yay!
This is our first show of 2019. We weren't here. So the last one was December 18th,
That's right. We skipped for Christmas Day.
Because it was all on Tuesdays, and there's no council meetings. And
yep,
long,
that's right.
Long sojourn.
So we've made it now to January 8th.
8th.
Of 2019.
Elvis Presley's birthday, I think.
Is that right?
Either that or Nixon or one of them. I don't know.
Actually, I got hit with a quiz question last night by Red Mitchell at the city council meeting. He said, what was the date of the Emancipation Proclamation?
Of course he asked you because you know all things.
And I said, sure, it's January 1st, 1863.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Right?
1863.
But I actually learned something very interesting from Red last night. It was that apparently in black churches across the country for all the way through the 20th century, there was a tradition on around New Year's Eve. They called it Watch Night. I think it was Watch Night. And what it was is there were people all across the country who were anticipating Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah.
So they were waiting patiently for it to actually
It happened in 1863?
Right. So the thing is that there were people would gather, actually, in the black community across the country for, and I didn't know that. This is interesting.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a tradition. I don't know where or if it's even still practiced, but where people would get together, it wasn't just like New Year's Eve. It was like watch night. It was sort of in memory of.
So it happens every year?
We did. I don't know if it's still a tradition, but it was a tradition for a longest
time.
Didn't
the Civil War go on a lot after that?
I went it through 1865. You know, and there were some strategic aspects, too, of the Emancipation Proclamation. Mm. Certainly, if you emancipated people, they would be maybe a little bit more willing to actually fight to help you out for the
Union. But you couldn't vote. Didn't get the vote till
not yet.
Much later.
Well, yeah. And then women came even later.
Right. Tell me that. I wasn't born then.
Right.
A little bit after. My mother was born.
See, so go up to the Sullivan Chamber on any given Monday night.
And you'll
learn some history.
Yeah. If not to you, from you.
It's true. Actually, I got a shout out from the mayor last night.
It was a reference.
Councilor Toomey. Councilor Toomey, they were talking about one of these cases, the thing about a real estate transfer fee tax, whatever you want to call it.
And they acknowledged that he had gone back many years.
And Councilor Toomey actually read from this thing he wrote in 1991.
Right.
And I just sort of made a little high sign to the mayor saying, like, yeah, I know, I've got a copy.
That's incredible. 27 years ago?
It's.
And it did.
Well, you know, the thing is, again, not to digress, but the thing is.
Why not?
From around 1989 on to. For a good while, it was when the CCA, Cambridge Civic Association, had sort of risen to the pinnacle of their political power.
Mm-hmm.
Before Question 9 and rent control pretty much
brought them down
the tubes.
Right, that's true.
But which was like not until 1994 and the subsequent years.
Well,
I mean, CCA was sort of still around for a
yeah.
while afterwards until maybe the beginning of the 21st century.
Mm.
Anyway, it was not easy being a Councillor Toomey when you were one of the four independents and were being outvoted 5-4 on pretty much any initiative you brought in. So if Councillor Toomey came in with a program that was basically saying this is what we really ought to be doing to address some of the housing issues, including talk about making some reforms to the old rent control system so that it would survive challenge.
Uh-huh.
You would never get, Councillor Toomey could never get the votes.
That's funny because, you know, in today's climate, those CCA people have morphed into progressives and they like those things.
It's
funny.
But to some degree, it was a matter of who was going to get credit, you know. And
so
also, who were you accountable to? So during the rent control years, the CCA was very much, sort of in partnership with the Cambridge Tenants Union.
Well, that would continue today with the Cambridge Residents Alliance, as one of the former
vice presidents of CCA said when I was on the board. It says, "We have to make sure we make nice with our traditional political bloc."
Uh huh.
Right.
But then they also represented kind of the West Cambridge kind of that.
The CCA was sort of the core of the Cambridge Civic Association. Historically, was more of a West Cambridge-y kind of
But then you had the Small Property Association,
which were
also
diametrically opposite.
Right, so maybe that's why all that fell apart.
Right. But the thing is that, you know, and it's in a way, it's a little bit sort of like the way immigration reform rhetoric goes nationally, where Democrats come up with a proposal, but then the Republicans say, well, we're not going to let you be the person to solve this. And then they flip the parties. And then the other side says, well, we've got a proposal. And they say, well, we're not going to support you because we don't want you to get the score of the political points. So nothing gets done, right?
Yeah.
And honestly, that's kind of why rent control died, too.
Oh, yeah. They couldn't come up with any compromises.
So
then it went out to everybody.
I won't name particular names of counselors, but there were some counselors who actually were politically pretty strong. So I don't think they had to worry too much about their re-election chances. And they were really the only ones who were in a position where they could have actually strongly suggested reforms without jeopardizing their political career. But everybody backed down. And so consequently, as Councilor Toomey reminded us, this will be decided by others. And it was, really.
Yeah.
So anyways, an interesting little history lesson
night. That was good. I think people need to be aware of that.
Yeah, it's actually remarkable. Actually, a number of people, not just last night, but in other nights, people around City Hall have been commenting much more frequently about the lessening of institutional memory within the building.
Oh.
So some of the longtime city staff sort of moved on.
Yeah, right.
But also the city councilors, as you bring in new blood, it also means some people who actually had a long view of things.
Which really,
are
at this point, is Denise Simmons and Tim Toomey.
And Tim Toomey, right?
Craig Kelly's been there, but not as long.
As long, right? You know, and
well, that has just changed too.
Right, but there's something to be said for having a long-term memory about what ideas work and what don't, and why.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's pretty easy for a newer counselor to just sort of, you know, throw something into the fire and say, well, here's a great idea. You know, it's one of the things I used to like about Councilor Reeves. He would, when somebody would do that, they'd go, well, let me tell you, we did that back in 1993.
Well, hopefully the counselors are doing their homework and looking back at past actions to know when that has happened.
It's, you know, it's easy, you know.
Some do, right?
When people do looking back these days, they almost invariably use something like Google. Or if they use a database within the city council record, then they go back a little while. But the thing is that if you go back long enough, that's not really retrievable, right?
Like, for example, saying you couldn't find that 91 order?
Well, I'll give you, for example, so people, when they were doing an update of the Sanctuary City Ordinance, or a city order or resolution that the City Council passed, I think in 1985, people were saying, well, what did the original one say?
And you couldn't find it?
I actually had to go into the city clerk's office and get a copy of it, because that's the way you used to do things.
Because not everything is online. Is that what you're saying?
Not everything
is
online.
Or
right?
If it is, it's very hard to find it.
That's right.
I don't find the city's website
Good. Actually, you know, one of the greatest sources when I want to find a reference is actually the Harvard Crimson. So when they were on their game, the Harvard Crimson reporters would actually report on things.
Wait a minute. What about the library? Or the archives? I mean, we have the Chronicle.
It.
We have everything on.
Right. But the thing is, you don't have it all online. I think the Chronicle and other names.
That goes way back.
Right. But the thing is that recently.
In terms of an order.
Right. But there was a rule that says, like, for example, you could get the Chronicle up to 1921. I think it's now up to some many years later now.
Yeah.
But the thing is that there's this big blank area, you know, where you really couldn't access the Chronicle archives.
But city documents. I'm just saying. I think that might be another source. Alyssa Pacey is the archive, and she's wonderful.
True.
So if you're watching this, Alyssa,
she's my hero.
Could answer our question.
Yeah. So anyway, but you know, retrieval of information is not so easy when human beings aren't there to actually tell you the way it was.
You do need human beings, right?
That's why
we respect our elders. And,
yes. So anyway, so the council, we're back, and the city council came back into session.
It was a relatively short meeting, I thought.
You know, it was last night's city council meeting was a relatively...
The public comment was longer than the discussion,
It was a pretty crunchy agenda. Some of the orders that were in there were substantial. There was not much from the manager.
That's true. It was only like five.
Really kind of quick and easy. But there were some orders where... I like to refer to it as, I think of them as to some degree as table setting orders. Mm-hmm. So in other words, you know, again, they don't want, they're going to resent my even saying this, but the thing is that whenever you turn the corner from an even year to an odd year, which is in Cambridge, as well as cities and towns across Massachusetts, it's a municipal election year.
Okay.
There is a bit of a switch in emphasis toward setting the table, meaning what are going to be the relevant topics that are going to be part of the rhetoric for the, you know, as we head into the municipal campaign.
Yeah. Right.
You know, maybe it's not as bad as it was once upon a time, but I remember there were some councillors who would be sort of inactive until you sort of got into the odd year. And next thing you know, there's a flurry of orders, and then they all kind of find their way onto the campaign literature and whatever. So, I was joking about it the other day, saying how in 2017, sort of a number of people sort of forced the issue of bicycle infrastructure as sort of the be-all, end-all of the campaign, you know, and so no matter what candidate was about, you know, the first question they had to answer was, you know, how do you feel about separated bike lanes, right? And, you know, that activist group hasn't gone away, but the thing is but now there is, what's the sort of the hot topics now for this year? Trees is one of them, right? So there's a sort of active, what I would call table setting that's going on.
Affordable housing, whatever that means.
Yeah, the conveniently undefined term affordable housing, which you can always bend to mean whatever you feel your supporters are going to want you to say, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, one example of this, I don't know if you got, did you get the copy of this that came in the mail?
I did not. I got a Cambridge tree thing in the mail, but not that one.
Okay, so.
Oh, wait a minute, let me see that.
All right, so.
When did that come in?
So what this was is there was a...
That's different. That's not... I didn't get that.
Right. Okay, so what this was a fellow named Charles Teague, who was part of this group called the Association of Cambridge Neighborhoods.
Oh, right.
Which is actually
did put out that other one about trees.
Right, and this is... Yes. Right, and now this is this is primarily about
trees.
Group?
This is about trees. Oh, then yours just looks different, but I got something and it didn't have this thing on it, though.
Didn't say big mistake.
But it was mailed to me. It was a couple weeks ago. Remember
I got one in the mail, but this is the one I actually had at City Hall. It might be a variation of it.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Okay, so you didn't get this one mailed, but you got the one I'm talking about.
So
same people.
Yeah, so the thing is, listen, we all love trees, right?
Yeah, I'm learning more and more.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. But it does seem to me that there seems to be a bit of a willfulness right now to establish trees and tree protection and the canopy as sort of the kind of the easy issue for 2019.
Because who would hate trees?
Because who would hate trees?
Yeah.
So it'll be more of a battle to say, who loves trees more?
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You know, so, you know, you can't lose. You can't be accused of being an evil...
right, where bikes are kind of dicey in some circles,
So anyway, it seems to me like that's a little bit of what's sort of going on around here, all right? Come to think of it, you know, I'm actually waving the wrong piece here.
You are, because this talks about MIT.
Yeah. This was actually a parody that MIT did. I grabbed the wrong one, right?
Oh, okay.
But it looks similar, okay?
No, a little different. All right.
But the thing is this piece came out from Charlie Teague.
And mailed to everybody. It was mailed.
It went all over the place.
Yeah, everybody got it. Yeah.
You know, so that's not cheap. I mean, I think mailing a newspaper knockoff is cheaper than mailing first-class mail, but I don't know. But it's still not cheap, right? So I don't know. You know, big question is,
did everybody get mailed or only certain people? Maybe people on the list served. I don't know.
I think it was they basically probably took like either a registered voter list or whatever and then just, you know, mailed it out to everybody on the list.
Hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, we got a couple at the house. You know, so anyway, but they're trying to define trees as sort of the be-all, end-all, you know. By the way, my apologies for waving the wrong one, but some of the MIT kids are pretty good at doing parodies.
So where did
parodies.
You get that?
That MIT. Actually, I think they had that one at City Hall as well. That's why I confused the two. Yeah.
Right.
But so trees will be one of the big issues. I think the, for better or worse, this affordable housing overlay thing is going
to be the controversial issue. Well, that's all going to come to fruition. Envision is going to come up with their report this spring, yes?
Yeah. And in that vein, let's just say that there's an interesting kind of political splintering that's going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, you know, there was in 2017, for better or worse, there were these two kind of sides of the political coin. One was the a bitter Cambridge crowd, and then it was Cambridge Residence Alliance crowd. Yeah. Now, I've never particularly appreciated the notion that these two should somehow be dividing the dichotomy of Cambridge politically or otherwise. Because honestly, it's just a small handful of people here versus a handful of people here saying that they represent the people of the city, and they don't.
Yeah.
Right? But the thing is, they're active, and in the absence of anything more substantial, if you're a voter and you're just looking for advice, you know, and the only advice out there is from a couple of groups, you know, then you might just take that advice because what else you got, right?
Yeah.
You know, either that or you have to start doing what I do, is go up to the city council's meetings.
Well, you have the green part. You have that green decade. There's different groups you can align.
Right, but the thing is, a lot of these groups tend to sort of align with each other so that it becomes sort of just two. So anyway, one interesting little split that seems to be happening to me is that the, and it's more than a split, really. It's the A Better Cambridge group, which started out as sort of build more housing, right?
More transit-oriented.
Development has now sort of, they still have that, but they've really taken this very hardcore YIMBY aspect, meaning anybody who disagrees with us is just an evil old-time baby boomer property owner who's trying to hold on to their own, and they're trying to block everybody else from having housing.
So have they taken a stance on the overlay thing? Do they
Totally for it.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
So there's the build new housing, and then there's the bring as much housing stock over into the subsidized category as you possibly can.
Yeah.
And in that regard, there's a convergence between the A Better Cambridge group and the Cambridge Residence Alliance, who are basically, they're now supporting all the same things.
They support the overlay?
Yes. Yeah. But in that regard, the people from the, and again, so I'm truly speaking, I don't talk about the organizations. They may have official stances, but I'm talking about who the people are. So the people who I always associated with the Cambridge Residence Alliance, some of them are sort of gung-ho for, you know, the overlay real estate transfer tax. Now there's a new emergence group, which is some of the people who were part of the Residence Alliance crowd, who are a little bit more like what I always thought of them originally, which are the people who want to do growth management, right? Which is sort of antithetical to the ABC. So now you've got the ABC of perspective, which says we need more.
Yeah.
And now you've got this group that's calling itself Livable Cambridge, which is an interesting play because...
Haven't they been around?
Well, there was the Cambridge Citizens for Livable Neighborhoods, CCLN, which exists now technically as... the Association of Cambridge Neighborhoods, that is to say, Charlie Teague.
Okay, so that is Livable Neighborhoods.
CCLN, Doing Business As Association of Cambridge Neighborhoods, right?
All right.
But, you know, so, and I don't know what they stand for or anything other
than
that.
So that's almost like a third group.
You know, but the thing is, if you add up the total number of people who are involved in all of these groups combined, you still could barely fit them into a city bus.
50?
Yeah, I mean, we're in that order, you know. So there's something kind of broken in terms of civic political discourse in the city. But that said, so this coming Saturday, this Livable Cambridge group is actually sponsoring a forum at the Senior Center. I think is it Sunday? I think on 4 to 6 p.m.
I did.
It's called, you almost have to watch Facebook to really know about these things these days. But basically, their theme is how big is too big. And they do feature Jimmy Tingle at it, which is kind of interesting.
So where did you, have you seen this? It's only on Facebook?
It's more of a Facebook thing, yes. It's social
media. I'm surprised that it isn't
Well, I don't think they're really doing a great job of promoting it.
I know of it, but I get so many emails, maybe I'm not paying attention. I did get something from but it's not a better case.
Well, it's interesting. It's sort of the political dichotomy kind of plays itself out, almost like warfare. So as soon as they start putting out an announcement that they're going to do that, then some of the people from A Better Cambridge who just want to build.
Yeah.
They say, well, we're going to be there at that meeting, you know. So I could just see it now. You're going to be the audience, like, okay, we've got the build more on this side of the room, and then the down zone at the farmland on the other side of the room.
So you think it's Sunday?
I think it's Sunday, yeah. I mean, I actually wrote it down, but I can't remember exactly.
It's too bad it's not Saturday, because if there's anybody that's into football.
It's January 12th, 4 to 6 p.m., so whatever day of the week.
Oh, that's Saturday.
Is that Saturday? Yep. Okay, so I stand corrected. It's January 12th, 4 to 6. Anyway, I have Mike go.
I'm helping someone with something. I don't know. If you go, that's good. I'll find out from you.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm trying to suggest that trees and housing are going to be like the sole issues for the coming year. But it is,
it's
we
right
are
up
starting.
There. We're it's starting, an election year, so you know it's
right.
going to be.
Yeah. We're starting to, so the trees is sort of like the easy balm issue where everybody loves trees. And then the housing one will probably have a lot of
Well, but speaking of issues, the whole thing with the water main break, that's going to emerge, I think, as possibly, like,
you
what
know,
are we doing with our infrastructure?
Right, and we should definitely talk some more about this because I think it's an interesting thing.
Yeah.
You know, I was on this water and sewer advisory committee back in the 1980s.
Right.
And learned a lot about the water system for the city of Cambridge, and I've even conducted tours for people out in the watershed.
Right, but that isn't the pipes underneath
no,
the ground.
No, but you do learn a lot about it.
But,
One of the things that's interesting, so I think was it December 23rd, there was
it was December 23rd,
major
at 4
water
a.m.
main break on Craigie Street.
Yeah.
And
Brattle
inundated.
And Craigie.
You're right. And it kind of flows down, water flows downhill, gravity being
so
what it is.
So it seemed to be.
And it found its way down
Mercer
Spark
Circle.
Street. Berkeley Street.
Everybody that spoke in public comment
Mercer
were all
Circle.
From Mercer Circle.
I think there were about eight homes on Mercer Circle.
Was eight homes that were
that just happened
flooded.
Right in the path. It really they had
waist
like
high water in their
basements.
Five
and
feet
and,
of water.
You know, a lot of these were finished basements that had important possessions.
And even though they said they had elevated stuff in their basements, it
you,
was
you
5
know,
feet of water doesn't
yeah,
protect that.
Exactly, and they didn't see this coming at all.
No,
you know?
No warning.
But this is sort of a tragic thing, but maybe something good can come of this, because I think that, you know, we spend so much damn time in this city focusing on these narrow issues, like as if
the lanes
bikes and trees
and, bikes.
And
meanwhile,
overlays
our
are the whole
thing
story.
The same thing with the federal government, like the infrastructure, bridges and roads,
right.
We need to, you know.
Yeah, so maybe this will actually help to refocus a little bit of attention to the fact that, you know, there's a lot more stuff that goes into running a city.
Right.
Than just these sort
and
of
And I'm
top
curious
topics.
To know, and I'm sure there's going to be meetings of it, like what's the maintenance plan for these kinds of things? Because obviously all the pipes are
one,
old.
One
yes?
thing that I can, not all, but
no,
one thing I can
no.
think I can say is that, you know, and this is sort of this is the sad truth.
Yeah.
Sort of like almost harkens back to Flint, Michigan stories.
Oh, right.
Is that Cambridge is actually way ahead of most other cities and towns in terms of a planned maintenance and replacing of water mains and doing this and getting out of the game.
And getting the lead out of the
Whereas a lot of other cities and towns are, you know, basically just coasting on what they got and not doing the investment.
Because they don't have the funds.
Now, that said, you know, you can replace a 4-inch main or an 8-inch main under some city streets, and that's been, you know, they working their way through doing those sorts of things. But the thing is that there are some of these major mains, like on Craigie Street had a 28...
So that was a major main.
Yeah, it's like a 28-inch and a 24-inch main on different sections of Craigie, and one just failed.
But there had been some repair in, when the 50s, you said?
See, now that was the interesting thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew that some of these pipes are old, and it needs to be emphasized that the older pipes aren't necessarily the ones that are in the worst shape. Some of the old ones are incredibly robust even still. But the thing is that it turns out the pipe that burst was actually installed in 1867.
Okay,
so you're putting in 20. So the city is expanding their infrastructure. They have their own water supply. Nobody's working off of wells anymore. Well, I'm sure some were still. And so 1867. And I went, oh wow, I didn't know that.
But is that the only one, or are there other 1867?
There are others. Though there are definitely others.
So they're probably going to be checking those, can they?
Well, I think there was a city council order asking for a report, I'm going to really, really be eager to see.
Yes.
Which hopefully will give a good accounting for this.
Yes.
But the thing is, so it wasn't like it was just been untouched since then. I think it was in 1954.
No, that's what I said. That's what
they
I,
did a lining. Now, whether it was lined with concrete or what, I don't know. But the thing is they did, rather than do replacement, you do relining, and that's perfectly great.
So that was just a scheduled maintenance, you think? That wasn't because something had happened?
I don't really know.
So that would be interesting in this report.
But it was interesting. One of the people who stepped up to the microphone last night said that this pipe was installed during the administration of Ulysses S. Grant.
Yeah.
And it was the last major maintenance was when Eisenhower was president.
Right.
And I thought it was kind of an interesting way to sort of track time,
right,
just to give a sense of it. I have to say, you know, this as dreadful a thing as this was.
That's a long time.
The fact that, that you actually have infrastructure that's still working 151 years after it was installed is actually kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
When you really think about it.
Yeah.
Right? But it kind of makes me think about stuff. Like in front of my house on Broadway, there's a 30-inch main. That's it's a major connector for the major supply to service the whole eastern part of the city.
Yeah.
And it's like right in front of my house. And you know, so if there was a major failure right there, it's like, uh-oh, I'm
in
trouble.
But they brought up, I mean, Tim Toomey brought up, there have been, there were two water main breakers in Kendall this year,
There have been.
I mean,
you can pretty much count on there being, there have been major failures in Kendall Square.
Yeah.
There have been other ones that were not as major, but, you know, but pretty significant ones.
I usually associate with maybe because there's so much construction going on and they're putting new things in. You don't think of it
Councillor Carlone floated that suggestion during the discussion. Ha, ha, ha. It was not intentional. that, in fact, sometimes it's when you're doing construction that there's some disruption and vibration, which can cause an old or weak piece of infrastructure
to fail. Connecting something old to something. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how it all works.
Right.
I'm not an engineer.
Yeah. So, you know, was it something that was going on? The truth is that also when there's change
also
in the
temperatures.
Weather, when it gets colder, that's when these failures are more likely.
Right. I think that's what it was attributed
but,
to.
But, you know, I think if I could have one wish for the municipal election year, it would be that we put infrastructure like our water system and sewer system way up high on the priority list of issues that people should be talking about.
Right.
You know, and maybe that's not going to be as popular as trees.
Or affordable. I mean, housing is,
but it affects us all.
Yes.
You know, and, you know, so anyway, that's my wish for 2019.
Good.
You know, I mean, I was joking with somebody. I said, I'm an infrastructure geek. It's on my birth certificate.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. No, I agree. We don't pay attention to what we can't see.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll take a break and we'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.
See you then.